The following is a recording of a live client event Heritage Financial recently held to address a concern many of our clients have been sharing in our meetings, how to think about downsizing their real estate either now or in the future. This is part of a series of podcasts Heritage is doing to help inform our clients about a variety of wealth management topics. If you have any questions, please reach out to us through the Let's Talk page on our website and we'd be happy to help. So thanks for coming to our conversation about real estate downsizing. This is a topic that came out of a lot of conversations that we've had with clients over the years. You go meeting to meeting and we talk about it, but nobody's exactly sure what to do sometimes. So it seemed like it was in a lot of people's minds, but specific plans, best practices for what to consider and how to do it were a little bit elusive. So we figured we'd put this together, give you some things to think about and provide some answers where we can. Hopefully mission accomplished at some point. I think it makes sense to be thoughtful about real estate in Massachusetts. Prices are expensive. It's one of your biggest assets, if not your biggest asset. It's also your home, which you can't put a price on. It's got a lot of your stuff, which Ned's going to elaborate on a little bit. Probably got a lot of your kids' stuff that you don't know what to do with or how to get rid of it. So, you know, it's an important topic, and it's not one to rush into. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Sammy Azuz, and I'm a managing partner at Heritage Financial. Which means my day job is really to help clients with their financial planning and investment needs, as well as being a part of the management team at the firm. This is my 18th year of doing this. I'm a certified financial planner and an attorney. For those of you who don't know Heritage, we're an independent and employee-owned wealth management firm. We're based in Westwood. We're fee-only fiduciaries, 30 employees. We manage around $1.5 billion for individual clients, mostly in the area. Ned Mahoney is with Keller Williams in Needham. Ned has over 30 years of experience as a realtor working with buyers, sellers, developers, primarily Needham, Newton, Wellesley, although, you know, can go well beyond those areas as needed. As you'll see and learn from his presentation, he has a ton of knowledge and experience that he applies to his clients' benefit. He's a top agent in the area, and before Keller, he was at RE/MAX. He's a member of their Hall of Fame, recipient of their Lifetime Achievement Award. He's an avid golfer. Nice enough to golf with me. He enjoys writing and spending time with his family. So, Ned, without further ado, Ned Nasher.
All right. Thanks very much. You know, the subject tonight, you know, downsizing has a lot of preconceived notions of downsizing. What does it really mean? Is there a real definition to it? I didn't even look up whether Webster's got that cornered or not. But I could tell you, I really couldn't give you a 20-word or less definition of the subject because it's so different and individual to where people are going and what their priorities are. And it's a great, you know, point in life to be able to make decisions and follow your dreams and do what's on your bucket list. And that's what simplifying your life allows you to do. And one of those things, obviously, is how to deal with a piece of real estate that you've probably owned for a long time. And one of the interesting things that when I'm called upon, you talk to people and they begin to talk to you about the fact that we get this house and we use the living room, we use the den, we use the kitchen, we use the bedroom and a bath, you know, five or six rooms for the most part is all people respond that they use. And then they say, you know, the house even gets larger as the kids leave, but when they really leave, after they come back and then they leave. It begins to get more spacious. And what I wanted to do to maybe help kick us off, and Ash, you jump in any time you like, and it's just to give you an example of somebody I walked through the process recently and some of the similarities that I find in conversations that I have with people. But years ago, the conversation of downsizing, a lot of people talked about it. Not many people did it. This time, in this market, there's a lot of people that are taking it on and they're doing it. Because I think people's health is better or they have more money. There's probably a lot of different reasons why people make a move that never seemed to make a move before. They talk about it, but kind of would anchor in place. And it was a friend of mine that I sold a house to in 1997. And then they had three girls, they returned and then they left and then they got married. And through the course of a couple of conversations, they were able to get specific, and we've heard specific is terrific, or terrific is, they identified what they wanted. They had a house in Mattapoisett. They had a 4,500 square foot colonial in Needham on an acre, and they didn't need it. But did they have stuff? I mean, it was, the garage was loaded, the attic was loaded, and mostly were the kids type of stuff. But we did help them manage through that. But we sat down and over a cup of coffee identified what their priorities were to get into smaller space, to get closer to Needham Center, because they were committed to the community, volunteered in a lot of things in the library, and volunteered with the high school coaching. So it was, but I need an office because I have a side business, and we want a master with a master bathroom. So now it seems like it's almost becoming the same house they're leaving as they're beginning to talk to me, you know. But no, they said, look, we're in 45 now. We can do it in 2,500 square feet. And so I was given the opportunity to go out and do the impossible, right? You know, let's go out and find our dream home. Because you have a stock of housing that's in the area, that's 1950s, 1960s, and the rooms are small, the bathrooms are small. It's not the lifestyle that they were accustomed to. But lo and behold, we did it. We did it by finding a smaller house in the location in the neighborhood that they wanted. And it was in great condition. And all they had to do was add the two-car garage, put the master up above, and in between where there would have been an oversized breezeway, he got his office with a full bath off of it, because they figured if we ever needed to age in place or need a knee replacement or a hip replacement or a health issue, we could manage it on one floor. So it, you know, it worked for them, and it's worked for a lot of other people as well. And it's a question of really having heart-to-heart conversation, I think, with your real estate shrink. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, a lot of times the dynamic of couples, you know, is such that they can talk around the subject and talk around the subject, and really not get anywhere because somebody may want to stay more than the other one wants to stay. It was in picking the house, right? Who led? Well, she did. So just suck it up and do what your wife wants you to do. No, I'm kidding. But there's a dynamic to it, and it's one that has to be sorted out. And when it's sorted out, it can become exciting and not drudgery. There is a certain way. But getting back to this couple I worked with, what I found sitting down with them and looking around this house now that's 25 years old and they bought it new, is the fact that through their eyes and through a lot of people's eyes that have been in a house for 20, 30 years, they see things a lot newer than I see them. You know, we put it in that kitchen, that's new. Well, it was new 20 years ago, you know. So it helps to get a reality check from someone that can take an objective view. And, you know, we do tread lightly because we never want to offend people, but it's a reality. You know, if you've made the decision, we're going to go from here to there, and we've got this amount of time, then a strategic approach has got to be put together with, what to do. So in this case, I decided tonight to change the topic from downsizing to right-sizing, because it's not necessarily smaller, but, you know, more functional and more in line with your dreams and your goals and the things you have fun doing, or closer to your kids or your grandkids, or and everybody's got a different priority. Maybe you have two houses. Maybe you just want to rent rather than buy. But it becomes a question of lifestyle. You know, the other thing I was thinking as you were talking is that it, you know, people get confused, or not confused, they get frustrated with the subject and then they, you know, turn the TV on, right? We'll think about it tomorrow. Okay. But it's, you know, how much pain are you able to, you know, it's not an easy process. And it doesn't have to be, I don't have to know where I'm going necessarily to begin to start it. I can always rent something, sort up my stuff out, put what I know I want to keep in storage, and look at it as this is a new start. We're going to get new stuff. We're going to be in a new place. You know, if that seems to be what is attractive to you. In that may be because what I'm seeing is a trend of rental property being built, and you never saw for leasing signs or for rent signs. And there, in the next few years, there is going to be a surplus, particularly in downtown Boston, of apartments. Now, I don't know what the prices are, but I mean, for somebody whose aspirations were would like to move into town into a nice building, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of opportunities in the next couple of years, because they're going to get aggressive to rent those apartments, because it's going to eat them up if they stay vacant. So it doesn't necessarily mean I got to sell and I have to buy. I can sell and I can rent, and then I can decide what it is I want.
Sorry. Ned, do you do a lot with over 55 communities? What are your thoughts on those as an opportunity for people to downsize?
I didn't think much of them when I was younger, because that's where all the old people were. No, they do have them, and they're quite popular. When they were first built, I would say about 20 years ago, they were difficult to resell. And now they're not. They're in demand.
So what are your basic recommendations for how to prepare my home for sale?
There are certain things that you have to do. But what buyers are going to, the 30-something buyer, they grew up with granite kitchens and baths, so their expectations are very high. So, and they watch a lot of TV, and they're on the Pinterest, and they have style is very much what they are, can entrap a buyer, because they're not as sophisticated as somebody that's really looking at the important stuff. They're looking at the wrapping. But you can improve a lot of the saleability of your house. It has to be hardwood. You get rid of the carpet. And they like them darker floors. They like the lighter colored walls. Many shades of gray, I say, is pretty much where their eye goes. A dated fixture can throw the feel all off. So you go to do the high impact, low cost things, which is redoing floors, taking out carpet, replacing light fixtures. They'll transform the feel of rooms, and they're not that expensive. And talk about the timing on that versus an addition, or it's difficult, but not impossible to get around. Doesn't mean you got to do a total gut job, because you probably won't get all of your money back if you were to gut it out. My guess, but change light fixtures, change the vanity, change the floor. If it's got the green and mint colored tiles, like my bathroom did, we took it out because we're going to be there a long time, but I've seen them sprayed, I've seen them painted, and it looks pretty good. And those older bathrooms are, like concrete. I mean, so that it's not like you're covering something up. They're there to stay for the most part. It's the tubs. You can resurface tubs, and you can paint tile. You can give it a nice clean feel, because I think that's what a buyer expects. They're going to come in and do things for themselves too.
So I've been told that I may have a teardown just based on my neighborhood and what's going on. How do I prepare that for sale?
Working with somebody right now similar situation, and it's all we do is evaluate it. What's the land worth? Try to separate it out, give you some perspective as to because if there are things that you can do, there's a big market, in the middle, not everybody's buying a $2 million house. So you've got people that will really roll up their sleeves at an opportunity to get into a great location with a house that they can work. We say the house has got good bones, then if it's priced right, somebody's going to take it and probably pay you more. The end user, I call them the end user, which is the people coming out of, the regular person who's going to live in it is what I'm trying to say. They'll always pay more than a contractor will, because they've got to have that profit range. They're going to buy based on what can I put there, and that's how they're going to dictate what the offer they're going to make. Yet, if you put a little bit of effort into it and open it up to the widest possible audience, then you're going to get the best result.
What should you be aware of when you're thinking about getting into a condo for the first time if you haven't had experience with that before?
Well, it's very location sensitive, you know, but I think that it's more the key parts of that condo association. Their financials are the important thing, how old they are, who the management company is. You don't want to buy into a problem. Selling a lot of them, what we usually asked is we want the condo docs, we want the financials, we want the budget. We also want the minutes to the last three meetings so that we can see, has there been a discussion? Is there a hint that I'm walking into a problem down the road? So as much as identifying it physically, you really got to make sure it's solid, because there's a lot of age on a lot of these buildings, particularly the ones that are closer in. And they're not, for the most part, they're not large complexes, which on the one hand, sounds like it should be easier to run and more efficient, but a lot of times the larger scale complexes are run more efficiently and have lower condo fees. Just turns out that way. But it's the style. You know, if you're getting closer to Brookline or Newton or Boston, you're more likely going to be looking at a garden style, which is a one floor setup with an elevated building, is what you're going to find for the most part that you'd probably be looking for. And if you're a little bit further out, then townhouses become an option. But a lot of the townhouses, unless they're closer to 495, don't have that master bedroom on the first floor, because it's the scarcity of the land and the projects they're doing. They do have a lot of stairs, so you have to evaluate, do I want to do stairs? But again, there's a lot of innovative stuff in the works. I'm seeing builders now there because they want to maximize the land. They're going to, I have a fellow that's building one and he's putting an elevator in, you know, so that there'll be two single level units, so you'll have single level living, and the second floor will be able to use an elevator, and the first floor will have a basement, so they'll be able to utilize it down. So pretty creative, and so I think that's where things are going. Options are being created. I don't necessarily have a favorite. There's a lot of nice places.
How do you compare the costs of retiring in place versus getting into a rental?
I guess it's a math equation in terms of how big your lot is. What's the maintenance cost outside per year versus the condo fee? You know, a reasonable condo fee doesn't sound very reasonable these days, because they've jumped to $600, $800, $1,000 a month in the better units. You know, it's not like I'm going to go and get a place with a $300 condo fee. Those aren't easy to find at all, or if they are, you better be cautious about the upkeep and the maintenance. So it's probably going to be more expensive on the condo fee. If you put your expenses, an average condo fee, I would figure is going to be $600 or $800. And there's many that are above that. Because some of them are older buildings, and you know, there's a complex in Needham that's got I think it's $1,200. But in the condo fee is the heat and the AC. So you have to separate that. You have to do some calculations sometimes in these older buildings. But you're probably going to spend slightly more, you know, on a condo fee.
So we've talked a lot about getting rid of our stuff. Should you get a dumpster, or is there something else that you should do?
I don't like dumpsters, because they often become community dumpsters, you know? You put a dumpster...
I would differ from you. I'd say if you want to make friends in your neighborhood, get a dumpster.
Right. People will contribute to your dumpster as long as you can deal with that. I don't like it because it's just, It increases the pain. Okay, if there's stuff in the basement, I got to lug it upstairs. And you're not just, I guess you can walk into these canisters. But then you got to do the, you got to throw it in. And you got to go back. And you got to bring it up the stairs. And then that's pretty, there is an alternative. Because a canister is $700-$800 to put a can. And if you sort it out for the same amount of money, you can have a crew come, as long as you've identified what piles are going. They'll come in with four or five guys, and it'll all be gone. If you're ready for them, I think that's going to feel good, too, to say, geez, I got that done.
Now I'd like to transition into some of the tax rules and financial planning considerations around selling and buying your new place.
First, when you sell your home and it's appreciated in value, you have to pay a capital gains tax. You will get a capital gain exclusion of $250,000 per person, $500,000 per couple. To calculate the gain, you take the sale price of the home minus the basic cost to sell, realtor, closing costs, etc. You subtract your basis in the home, which is what you paid for it, plus your improvements. On that table there, there's a handout. It's kind of a handy checklist of the improvements that you can keep track of or will keep track of that you make to your house that can add to your cost basis. There's a slide here. Some of them, or not a slide, sorry, a presentation here. Some of these additions, bedroom, bathroom, deck, garage, porch, patio, storage shed, fireplace, landscaping, driveway, walkway, swimming pool, exterior lighting. You get the gist. Those are things that if you do them, they add to your cost basis and reduce your eventual gain. You can use that $500 or $250 if you're single exclusion, if it's been your primary residence for two out of the last 5 years. You can use it more than once. You have to wait a couple years usually between using it. A couple notes on that. Sometimes people get confused. Mortgage has nothing to do with your cost basis and the gain that you have. The mortgage is a separate transaction. It will be paid off when you sell the home. Two, some of the older rules are no longer around. So before 1997, you could defer a gain by buying a new home. You could defer a gain if you were over 55. That's not the case anymore. They have the new exclusion rules. If your spouse passes away, you can use both $250,000 exclusions within 2 years of the first spouse passing. So that's something that has tripped up clients that we meet with for the first time that are rebuilding their lives after their spouse has passed. They've waited 2.5 years. They do lose that exclusion. But you do get a partial step up in basis for the fact that they owned half the home technically. So those are the kind of the capital gains rules, things to think about. New mortgage rules. So you might have seen there's a new tax bill. Interest is deductible if you're still going to itemize your deductions, which not everybody will be going forward, if the mortgage is $750 or less. If it's more than that, it's just proportionately deductible. So some of the rules have changed, but you really only have to worry about it if you're having a really big mortgage going forward in your next property. How to finance a transaction. This is something we've been involved with, Kenzie knows, a few times over the last couple of years. In a perfect world, you would time a sale, close, have a whole bunch of money, and go buy the new place. That literally has not been happening. Through no fault of anybody, just the way the market is. So how are you going to time the fact that you need a whole bunch of cash temporarily until your place sells? Bridge loans no longer exist, so that's not an option. One, and we talk to our clients, you should know all of this, having a home equity line of credit on the home that you're selling can be tapped into to come up with whatever you need to either put a down payment, buy the next place, and then when you close on your sale, that will get paid off and you'll get the net after the home equity line. So even if you're selling the place, sometimes people feel like, well, can I still use the home? You can use it till the day you can't, which is when you don't own it anymore. Second thing is margin. Some of our clients have taken advantage of this. You can borrow against your portfolio, so your non-retirement assets, not your retirement accounts. The margin would feel comfortable if you borrowed like about a third of your portfolio value, but that's something that's come in handy for a lot of clients who have basically taken out a third, used it, bought the place, waited for the sale to close, paid off the margin, and lived happily ever after. So those are a couple of the bridge financing options that are available to you. Home equity line, portfolio loan.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions about the content in the podcast or any questions about your specific situation, please don't hesitate to reach out to us through our website, heritagefinancial.net. We're also on LinkedIn and Twitter. Thank you.